Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Snakes in the Diamond podcast, covering the Arizona Diamondbacks from the Dominican Summer Leagues to the Major Leagues. And coming back for another appearance here on the podcast is Braves Today Managing Editor Lindsey Crosby. So, Lindsey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me again. It's good to be back to talk more Snakes and Braves. My kid's favorite team, Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah, looks like it's going to be a pretty close series. I think both teams are in the wild card race. Atlanta has the top spot. The Diamondbacks are two games out after taking 2-3 of San Diego. So it should be, what are you looking forward to with this series?
So for Atlanta, they've got a lot of their top pitchers, right? You look at Chris Sale, all-star, going in game one on Monday. They've got Charlie Morton, who 40-year-old veteran. The all-star accolades aren't quite coming for him, but he is still a pitcher that they trust a lot in game two. Ace Max Fried in game three. Outside of the first start of the year against Arizona he had in Truist Park, he's been really good this season. And so he tends to get up for games like this where he's getting revenge against a team he struggled with earlier. And then promising prospect Spencer Schwellenbach on Thursday in the series finale, who has been significantly better than his 5.02 ERA would tell you. So really good pitching matchup. And for Atlanta also, offensively, a team that struggled this year to make up for or to match last year's homer production, but a chance after a good series against Philadelphia where they went 2 out of 3, they hit, I think it was 8 home runs across 3 games, a chance to take that power on the road in a ballpark that they're familiar with because they came in last year and I think won the series 2-1 there in Arizona last year. So you get your most of your good pitchers, and then you get an opportunity to go into a ballpark you've had success and see if you can repeat that on the stretch before the All-Star break.
So, yeah, where I see at where it comes in for the Diamondbacks, the main takeaway I think is to keep the Braves obviously in the ballpark. I look at the Braves lineup, they haven't been as successful. If you look at the leaderboard and we go by OPS Plus on Baseball Reference, you'd be surprised to see which team actually has the higher number.
So I would imagine it's probably Arizona.
Yeah. Because I've been actually surprised where the Braves rank offensively this year, and I think that has to do with, one, Acuna's been out for the year, and two, there was a lot of players last year on the Braves that probably had a career year. Would you agree or disagree with the latter?
I think we've all realized that last year was more of an outlier than we thought it was. Now, it's been true that Atlanta's baseballs have not flown as far this year as it did last year. We've kind of figured that out. But the homer production has gone back from tying the single-season homer record last season to middle of the road. I mean, their 96 home runs are fifth best in the National League. But that is weighed a lot by, one, the series they just had against Philly, and early season success that they had. The team did slump for quite a bit. OPS Plus-wise, Marcell Ozuna's been the driver of everything. He's at 164 OPS Plus. He's been one of the best hitters in baseball since last May. Made the All-Star team as an alternate behind Shohei Ohtani, but just has been very, very good. And then some of the guys who were struggling early in the year, your Austin Riley, your Jared Kelnick, your Ozzie Albies, they've all picked it up somewhat recently. All of them have an OPS plus over 100. Their batting averages are over 250, and they've been on some significant heaters recently. Jared Kelnick has been batting leadoff the last 2 weeks, and in that span, OPS of 875. He's hit 4 home runs in the last 14 games and has looked more like the top 10 pick in the draft, Jared Kelnick, that everybody expected, versus what you saw when he was in Seattle. So not the year that they thought they were going to have, but still a dangerous team that has shown that they can score runs in a hurry and is getting some pretty good contributions from their pitching. They lead baseball in shutouts with 11, and team ERA is one of the best in baseball, including Ronaldo Lopez being number one in baseball in ERA. So struggles on offense, but some guys have gotten hot recently. Although, like you said, they are missing the dynamic five-tool contributions of Ronald Acuña Jr. not having his speed in the lineup has definitely created a dent in Atlanta's running game. And so that's one area they lag behind the rest of baseball.
So, yeah, speaking of Lopez, I know the Braves picked him up, gave him a nice, fairly decent contract, even though he'd been a reliever and I would say successfully converted him into a starter. How's that been? How valuable has he been for you guys?
Both him and Chris Sale have been probably, in my mind, some of the best acquisitions of the offseason, not just performance-wise. Sale is tied for the league lead in wins with 11. His whip is the best in baseball, 2.71 ERA. And then Lopez, like I mentioned, his 1.71 is almost half a run better than anybody else. He's 7-2. The big thing for me is they've provided that veteran stability you needed when you lost Spencer Strider, but also the value you're getting from those guys to do it. To acquire Chris Sale, all you had to give up was Vaughn Grissom, who, young, talented hitter, to that point, had not worked out in the infield. They were going to move him into a timeshare in left field. He struggled with injury this year for the Boston Red Sox. And then Ronaldo Lopez is making $30 million across 3 years because he signed, like, to your point, he signed more on that reliever pay scale than on that starting pitcher pay scale. So great contributions and have really stepped up and helped since Mitchell Strider has been out, but also just great values in general. And it's allowed Atlanta to be a little more aggressive this offseason with going out and taking on dead money to acquire talented players like Kelnick, like Aaron Bummer, like Ray Kerr.
So looking kind of at the Braves rotation, obviously it's going to be the Diamondbacks best versus the Braves best. So would you say if the two teams that ended up locking horns in the postseason, this would be kind of like a mini preview of what's to come?
The Yelbert Diaz start notwithstanding for Arizona, I do think if Atlanta is throwing four guys in the postseason, you're seeing three of them right here, right? Chris Sale, Max Fried, your two lefties on top. They're going to be postseason starters. Ronaldo Lopez, like you mentioned, he converted from relief to starting. The team is being very, very careful with his workload, trying to make him, let him still be fresh when he gets to the postseason. He'd be a postseason starter. And then prospect Spencer Schwellenbach, again, ERA just over 5. But I wrote a big, long, deep dive on Braves Today on Sunday morning about just how good he's been. He's one of the league leaders in chase rate. He's one of the league leaders in barrel as far as lowest barrel rate allowed. He's been one of the best starters as he's been learning on the job at the major league level how to be a professional pitcher. So there's a possibility that three or four of these guys in this series would start or play pitch prominent innings in the postseason were these two teams to meet up. So it's probably a good experience to face them now to be ready for them in September or October.
Yeah, so looking at the wild card race, obviously the Braves are near the top. The Diamondbacks are the first team out of the race. Is there any teams that stand out to you that are, I would say, within Chicago's reach of 5.5 games of the third wild card? Which ones do you think are going to fade?
Yeah. Arizona, to me, feels like a team that, provided that you can stay healthy, is a team that is going to be in the wild card hunt all season. When you look at Arizona's, like, you look at this team, it feels from the outside like this offense has underperformed a bit versus what it did last year and what it's capable of. It feels like the pitching staff dealt with a lot of injuries, right? Merrill Kelly's been out for a while. When you have a guy the caliber of Zach Gallen, that's something that tells you, hey, like, this team is going to be a threat in the postseason. I feel like they've got some staying power. I don't quite feel the same about the Cardinals. That rotation, I want to say 68 of their 88 starts have gone to guys age 33 or 34 or older. And so a little curious about how well they're going to hold up down the stretch. I don't really think the Mets ultimately have the pitching to be competitive all the way through the season. The Giants haven't really seemed to have the offense to be competitive all the way through the season. And then both Cincinnati and Chicago feels like they're in this simply because the National League isn't that good this year, right? But Arizona feels legit. The Padres feel legit. And I'm still not 100% sure on where the Pirates should be in this. It feels like the Pirates' pitching has been really surprisingly good. Obviously, Paul Skenes helps that. Jared Jones coming back from injury. I don't think the offense is necessarily that great. Of all of those teams that you mentioned right there in the wild card race, your two lowest run totals are the Pirates at 362 and the Cardinals at 363. And they're two of the four teams in this wild card race that have negative run differentials. And not just negative, Pittsburgh's minus 29, St. Louis is minus 39. So I feel like Arizona's definitely still in this, and some of these teams are going to drop. I just don't think the Diamondbacks are going to be one of those teams. And I don't think the Braves are either.
Yeah, because looking at run differential, Diamondbacks were, I think, minus 20 last year. But I think it was a lot of the case because they had a really bad bullpen for about 4 months of the year. So it would turn close games, close losses into blowout losses. Games that they could have won end up slipping by. In fact, that happened. A similar thing happened when the Diamondbacks played the Braves in April. Like I said, they had big leads in games. I think a 3-run lead in game one and then a 6-run lead in the second game.
But the Braves had 2 8th inning comebacks to win two of those games. Yeah.
Ninth inning comeback in game one.
The big thing that stands out about this Diamondbacks team when you look at the standings, they've scored 444 runs. It's the second highest total in the National League. And so a lot of this can be ascribed to either injury or ineffectiveness from the rotation. Again, Merrill Kelly, Eduardo Rodriguez, Jordan Montgomery's been iffy. And so, like, you look at, again, 444 runs. It is 14 behind the Dodgers for the most runs in the National League. It's a dangerous offensive team. And I think for Atlanta, their issue here is they're going to have to keep the games close. Atlanta has struggled to put up runs this year. I want to say they have lost 28 straight games. They have allowed 5 runs or more. They have not won a single one of those games. Last time they won one was against the Astros early in the season. I think it was April when they last won a game where they allowed 5 runs. So Atlanta has to keep Arizona off the board. If the Diamondbacks can put up a 5 spot, the game is probably over, despite how good Atlanta's rotation and bullpen has been, because their offense hasn't quite caught up. So it's going to come down to, can Arizona prevent Atlanta from scoring? Can Atlanta keep Arizona from getting too big of a lead? Because if they do, likely end of the game right there.
Yeah, because Diamondbacks bullpen is a much different unit than it was in April. In April, Justin Martinez was kind of getting his feet wet. I don't even remember if he was actually on the roster when the Braves played the Diamondbacks. I don't think he was. He's kind of morphed into their get me out of this situation type pitcher before the ninth inning. And then Sewald being back has been huge for the Diamondbacks. I know he had back-to-back pretty ugly blown saves against the Dodgers and the Padres. In fact, that was the only reason they didn't sweep the road trip, but going into L.A. and San Diego, you always will take 4 out of 6.
Yeah. That's if you have a winning record in that trip, you feel good. And Atlanta took that same trip and did not have a winning record. So there you go.
Yeah. And when looking at the Diamondbacks offense, Moreno's been heating up. Carroll's kind of shown a pulse of late. He had a home run against Dylan Cease to start off the ball game. Eugenio Suarez has also been slowly coming out of his slump. He had a big game against the Padres, 5 RBIs, 2-run homer, and then take the lead in the 3-run double to basically put the game on ice. So those two have been slowly climbing out of their deep slump for basically the first half of the season. So they've been getting healthy. Perdomo's back. I think Perdomo got injured right before the Braves series, and then Alec Thomas also came back. Although his offensive impact wasn't until the San Diego series. He had a grand slam in game one that led to a big ninth inning comeback that they couldn't quite finish. And then he had another double in the final game. So Arizona's offense is definitely healthier than it was.
It feels like something that's going to help Arizona in this series is that on the whole for the whole season, they've been pretty decent against lefties. Just kind of looking at some of the numbers today. I mean, batting 279 against lefties is not something I think Atlanta's necessarily seen. A lot of teams that are good against their lefties, they kind of bank on, outside of those first two Max Fried starts of the year, he's been pretty locked down all season. And Chris Sale has been if not vintage Chicago White Sox Chris Sale, as close as you're going to get to that guy. And so to know that this team has, you know, batted 279 with a 770 OPS against lefties probably gives a little bit of concern for Braves fans that, like, hey, we have two of our three less reliable righties in this series. Shohei Bach is still young. Morton has his stumbles. He's good for a hit by pitch per game and about three walks. And then your two lefties, these are guys that, while I don't know exactly how well Fried and Sale individually have done against Arizona, this team bats well against lefties, against lefty starters specifically, 265 average, and then lefties as a whole, 279. So a little bit of concern there if you're a Braves fan that, like, you don't match up as well as you wish you did against the Arizona lineup for a four-game series.
Yeah, part of the reason they match up pretty well against left-handed pitching has been the addition of Randall Grichuk. Grichuk's hit well against left-handed pitching. Usually everything off his bat is 100-plus when he gets the bat on the ball against a left-hander sometimes. Although he's been a little bit on a ground ball. He's been hitting quite a few ground balls of late. Although at the same time, it's like it's 110 mile an hour ground ball, so it's either going to get through the infield or it's going to be a double play. He actually hit he hit the go-ahead home run on Friday against the right-hand pitcher of all teams. But Grichuk, I think Blaze Alexander was a big presence against lefties, although he struggled of late and they optioned down to AAA. So
yeah, they've been the flip side of that too is Atlanta doesn't have Michael Harris. Michael Harris is all, you know, he's out with a hamstring strain still. He's typically been one of the guys that helps balance this lineup against lefties. And then, you know, although you do get Adam Duvall, and Adam Duvall, all of his home runs this year, all but one have come against lefties. So not a team that's hit lefties as good as in past seasons. I remember last year, teams would stack their rotations to not have a lefty face Atlanta. And this year, they've been a little more ordinary against them. So depending on who gets some of those TBD starts, Atlanta could be in trouble. But either way, it feels like some good execution can take care of the Braves. Either way.
Yeah. I mean, the Diamondbacks probably won't have a left-hander in that series unless Fott had to go on the IL, because then they'd be forced to bring up Tommy Henry again. Right. Because Henry hasn't necessarily stuck as a starter in his career. Pretty bad numbers with 32 career starts under his belt. So you got basically a season's worth of sample size. Ryan Nelson's been picking up of late, although he won't be pitching in the series. And then Zach Gallen's been throwing the crud out of the ball. Its velocity has suddenly spiked after the month off with the hamstring injury. But yeah, I don't think the Braves will be seeing a left-hander in this series.
Yeah, which probably works in their favor, simply because they haven't been as good against lefties this year. But you never want to face Zach Gallen. You're never excited to face Zach Gallen, just knowing he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. And both him and Fried coming off of off of high Cy Young finishes in their past. I just wish this would line up a little better and we would get a Fried versus Gallen matchup on either game two or three. That would be the way to do this.
Yeah, I would agree. Of course, game one's probably, on an experience standpoint, is going to be the most lopsided. You got Chris Sale. Chris Sale, who is, I would say, a borderline Hall of Famer, depending on how his career goes, could get in, versus a guy making his major league debut, but kind of giving a little bit of intel to Diaz. Diaz is a high velocity arm, throws 95, mid to upper 90s, 94, 98, as a plus curveball, plus slider. Although StatCast has been misidentifying his pitches in AAA. And he's a guy, when he's locked in, he can buzzsaw a lineup. In fact, his last AAA start, he threw six no-hit innings with 13 strikeouts. I don't think
that's a lot of strikeouts. Oh my goodness. Yeah. See, and that's the kind of pitcher that has above average velocity, two plus breaking balls. That feels like the kind of pitcher that Atlanta has struggled with this season. The guys it feels like they've had a little more success with have been the ones with either control issues or the ones who were throwing a little bit softer, and it was easier to take advantage of their mistakes. So that's a situation where I feel like Atlanta's not really going to have an advantage as far as the stuff you're facing, although granted, Chris Sale does have plenty of experience here, being in his upper 30s. The flip side of this, Spencer Schwellenbach on Thursday The thing to know about him that's kind of outside of just looking at a 2-4 record and a 5.02 ERA is he's insanely athletic. He was the starting shortstop at the University of Nebraska, who added in duties as a closer in his draft year before Atlanta took him and turned him into a pitcher. So very good at defending his position, very athletic, and because of that, repeats the delivery really well. And then something he's been able to do is he's been really, really good at picking up new pitches. So when I saw him in the minors last year, in the lower levels of the minors, he was throwing a fastball in the mid to upper 90s. He was throwing a slider. He had starts of a changeup and a little bit of a curveball. You watch him this year, he's throwing a splitter. He's throwing a cutter. He's throwing a sinker. It's a legitimate six or so pitch mix. And everything that he throws, like the game, he just pitched a game on Saturday against the Phillies. He didn't throw any pitch more than 21% of the time. Very good at locating everything in the zone or keeping it out of the zone when he needs to. Throws a lot of stuff, and it's really hard to anticipate the sequences. Now, that said, he's still been working and learning on how to get strike three, the place he's been vulnerable, a lot of two strike base hits. And up until Saturday, he really struggled in the later innings as he started turning over that lineup into a third time. So still some room to get him, but it sounds like we have two really promising pitching prospects in this matchup. Again, I wish it lined up so they could face each other, but instead you'll get the veteran Sale versus Diaz, and you'll get Schoenbach on Thursday in game four.
Yeah. Although you'll get a young pitcher matchup that has less than a full year's worth of major league starts under his belt against Schwellenbach.
Hey, Schwellenbach didn't make any, because he had Tommy John after the draft, so he didn't actually debut in the minors until 23. That was his first time starting any games since high school. And he was mostly the lower minors, single A and high A in 23. And this year he went high A, double A, the majors rather quickly. So two guys kind of still both relatively little experience in professional baseball. And Schwellenbach's made it work for the most part so far, except the bad ERA from the first few outings. And Diaz sounds like he's a really promising prospect as well.
Yeah, it sounds like what happened to Brandon Pfaadt last year, where the first six starts were absolutely dreadful, and then the next 13 or 14, he kind of treaded water, and that's why the whole ERA number looks so bad for 23.
Yeah, going into Saturday's start, Schwellenbach had a fifth inning ERA over 13, and it was under 3 for the rest of his innings. It was one of those, he had a specific issue with that inning as he turned over the lineup again. So, again, the ERA sounds bad. He held Philly to one run in six innings on Saturday for his third quality start of the year, and I want to say he's made 7 starts. So he's definitely turned it on. Similar to Brandon Pfaadt, the numbers are going to look bad for the majority of the year. He'll be lucky to get it under 4.375. But he's a lot better than the ERA makes it sound. And it sounds like Diaz is somebody where you can't take him for granted because he doesn't have an ERA and it's his first start. He's gonna be coming out throwing gas.
And D-backs also, if Ciccone pitches in the series times through the order, he has a very severe times through the order penalty going from the first time through to the second time through. First time, nobody really touches him. First to second. First time through the order, I think, I forget the number, I don't have the exact numbers, but basically Ciccone buzzsaws through a lineup first time through, the second time through the order. That's usually when he gets hit hard and where his starts go south. But in the start set, he's able to get through the second time through. He'll usually give you about 5-6 quality innings, but if the opposing lineup doesn't get to him, as we saw in the case of his Washington start, where he went 6 innings and needed only to throw 70 pitches, I think, faced 20 hitters. He's not a guy that's going to pitch particularly deep. They kind of pull him 18 hitters. If he's going well, they might add a couple. And if he starts going south, they'll be quick to pull him. So that'll be something to watch if he is announced for Wednesday.
Yeah, that's something. Most of these Brave starters, provided the pitch count doesn't get bad, Atlanta's let them go pretty deep in the games. Max Fried on Friday night faced 4 different Phillies hitters for the 4th time in the game. And so because of it, Atlanta's bullpen is one of the most rested in baseball. They have some of the lowest inning counts as an entire bullpen of most of baseball because so many of these guys have gone so deep into games. Sale had a streak of seven innings. I want to say it was like a 6 or 7 game streak of seven innings at a time. Freed's got two complete games. And so even Schoenbach, being newer to pitching and having low pitch counts and his history, low workload history, he's been going 6 innings in a lot of these starts. And so there is an advantage. There's an opportunity there to get to Atlanta's starter late and knock him out of the game and get into the bullpen. Unfortunately, Atlanta's pretty confident in the bullpen mix, and they're pretty well rested. And so the issue there is going to be getting multiple runs off of that Braves bullpen.
So yeah, how do you, you mentioned the Braves bullpen. It's like, which guys are standing out for you right now?
So Joe Jimenez has been very, very good as one of the primary setup men. AJ Minter missed some time. Jimenez has come in a lot of times working the eighth inning. It took him forever to actually allow a run. He's been very, very good at coming into a fresh inning and keeping it clean. At the same time, Jesse Chavez, 40-year-old Jesse Chavez, the oldest reliever in baseball, has an ERA under 2, and he's excelled at almost any situation. He can come in, pitch multiple innings. He's the guy they'll go to if there's two runners on and only one out, and they've got to get out of this. Pierce Johnson, acquired from the Rockies last year via trade, is heavy, heavy curveball usage. One of the best curveballs in baseball by spin rate, by run value. He'll throw every 10 pitches, 7 or 8 of them will be curveballs. And so if you can time it up, he's gettable, but he's also been a really reliable piece for Atlanta. And the lefty AJ Minter is the franchise leader in holds. It's a fastball cutter profile, throws an occasional slider. But they have these four guys that they trusted that they mix and match to get to closer Raisel Iglesias, who doesn't have amazing velocity, but has a fantastic changeup and can really vary the speeds between the fastball and the changeup. So they feel like this bullpen's deeper than they've had in a while, and they're comfortable mixing and matching these guys. They've got multiple lefties they can go to, whether it's Minter, whether it's Dylan Lee, so they're not worried there. They've got plenty of velocity in this pen. It's one of the better bullpens Atlanta's had in a while. They've also spent a lot of money on this bullpen. It's one of the more expensive bullpens Atlanta's had in a while. But very deep, well-rested, and they trust just about all of them in almost any situation.
So, yeah. So, I'll give you my intel on the Diamondbacks bullpen. So, like I said, the bullpen's been kind of up and down. Overhauled, like I said, Seawald's the closer again. Diamondbacks have done a pretty good job. The Diamondbacks, in his first 17 appearances when he had a lead, they won the game. First time that didn't happen was the Dodgers game on Tuesday.
And then, that's a pretty good streak.
That happened. I guess you get that first blown save and loss out of the way pretty early before it could really damage your season, like it almost did last year. But, he said Martinez and his 102-mile-an-hour sinker has kind of taken over as the hot new thing in the Diamondbacks bullpen. He's a pitcher that, because of the sinker-splitter combination, he's a tough guy to elevate. So you're either going to swing through the over the top of the pitch or you're going to end up hitting a weak ground ball right at the shortstop.
That's 102-mile-an-hour sinker is gross. That should not be illegal in baseball. That's awful.
Yeah. I jokingly refer to Justin Martinez's sinker as Brandon Webb plus 12 miles an hour.
You're not wrong. Yeah. And it's a good sinker at 90, so I can't imagine at 102. Golly. It's absurd. Atlanta doesn't have anybody that is throwing 100. That's the thing about this bullpen. They've got some good velocity, mind you, but nobody who's pumping 100 miles an hour. And that's kind of the element that they haven't really had in a few seasons, if at all. And so that's one nice thing, I think, for Arizona is you don't have to deal with the absurdly high velocity that feels like every team has three guys who can pump 100. Atlanta doesn't have that. They haven't had that in a while. They've gotten better with their average velocity this year. It's the highest since 2017, but it's not anywhere near 100. And so I think that's probably a little bit of a relief because nobody's good at hitting 100-mile-an-hour fastballs or 102-mile-an-hour sinkers.
Yeah, and then Kevin Ginkle obviously was the closer in the Atlanta series. Now they've kind of moved him around in the bullpen. So they'll use him either as a middle inning, high leverage guy, or they'll have him be a setup man like seventh inning. Because he's pretty he's been pretty reliable. You can put him in almost any situation. He'll get the job done, other than maybe the closer role. But I don't think he necessarily struggled as a closer. One of his blown saves was you remember that one. It was a inning that kind of started with Blaze Alexander kicking a ball, hit up the middle, kind of took a funny hop when it hit the lip of the grass. And then, of course, as we know, when you make a mistake like that to Atlanta, it's sharks in the water.
It compounds. Yeah. All of a sudden they rip off three or four straight hits and you've given up three runs. Yeah. That was the early season Braves team. And we still see flashes of that. They'll struggle against a starter and the bats will get hot late when they face a reliever. But it's not been the same Braves offense where you thought no matter what, this team is not out of it until there's three strikes and three outs in the ninth inning. But they can still be dangerous. And that was a perfect example of eighth inning magic. And as long as they have an at bat left, they can make you pay and you have to execute to everybody.
And for Atlanta, if there's this area where they can really get to the Diamondbacks, if they can get to the starting pitcher, which of course outside of Zach Gallen, Brandon Fott and Ryan Nelson of late, and of course Nelson not in the series. If you can knock out the starter by the fifth inning, put up five runs on the Diamondbacks, they get to the soft underbelly where you have Thiago Vieira and Bryce Jarvis pitching. If you get those guys that have to eat up a chunk of innings, you're in a pretty good situation for that game. Because it's tough for those guys to eat up a lot of innings and not give up runs. Jarvis in particular has a habit of walking too many guys or letting it bats extend because he can't land that final pitch to put the hitter away. And of course, Vieira is another high velocity guy that doesn't have much control. And it's not like the case where Martinez's walk rate has completely dropped over the span of the last 2 months. I think Martinez is like under 4.5 walks per nine. Vieira is a little bit elevated. Of course, those stats include his unsuccessful stints in Baltimore and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That's kind of just,
it's that middle relief. It feels like for Atlanta that you're going to have to get that starter out early so that you can get into the bullpen. When you're facing Atlanta, the thing is going to be getting runs. You may not have many opportunities against some of these guys like a Chris Sale or a Max Fried to put up multiple runs, but capitalizing on every opportunity you get, especially if there's a defensive miscue. The Braves have the least errors in baseball, but when they make one, they tend to make two or three. They had a three-error inning against Philadelphia on Saturday. But after that, they still had the league lead in least errors allowed, or in least errors. But it feels like that's the key because, again, the stat I mentioned earlier, if you score more than five runs on Atlanta, you're probably going to win the game because they haven't won a game in that situation since April. So for Atlanta, it's definitely capitalize on your opportunities, especially against some of the studs like a Sale and a Fried, and just make Atlanta grind out and work to get back in the game because that offense hasn't consistently shown that they can do that in 2024.
Yeah, weirdly enough, that's kind of the same game plan the Braves need to kind of take against the Diamondbacks. It's almost, I would say each game's almost a race to five runs. Because the Diamondbacks aren't necessarily great when they give up five runs. I think they're 6-36 when the pitching staff gives up five runs. When their starting pitcher gives up five runs, they're 1-19. So
I want to say, I pulled this stat after the Philly thing. I want to say the Braves have four wins and maybe 36 chances this year when they've given up five runs. And those are all came early in the year. I off the top of my head, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's not great. And it hasn't happened since April. It's like a streak of like 28 straight games. They haven't won when they gave up five or more. So definitely a race to five here for everybody.
Yeah, I need to find it. I know I looked it up on StatHead recently about the five runs, because the Diamondbacks, when they don't give up five runs, they are 39-9 this season, which is the third best winning percentage in Major League Baseball. Of course, I don't think Stat has updated for their 39th win, but I can pull up their five runs or more. I don't know how updated this is. Let's see, it shows the Diamondbacks at Okay, so it shows them at 6-36. So they went from the fifth worst to the eighth worst due to their 7-5 win on Saturday. But I think Atlanta is not that far ahead of Arizona. They're, you know, like you said, 4-21. Of course, you don't have that many games.
Yeah.
They have the fewest games of allowing five runs, according to StatHead. So.
Yeah. The pitching, the starting pitching has been really good. But if it happens, Atlanta's probably losing that game. It was April 17th. That was the game, the last game they won. They beat the Astros 5-4. So, yeah, like, and what's frustrating is even if the pitching staff works out, they don't always win the game. Since April 17th, the Braves have held their opponents to three runs or less and still lost the game seven times. Like, it's if nine innings, you're only giving up three runs and the team still loses, that shows there's bigger offensive issues than just the balls aren't flying as far this year. And that's definitely what's going on here.
So, yeah. So, any concluding thoughts before we head out?
I think it's going to be a good series. I'm really excited to see how each team handles the opposing lineup, simply because both these teams kind of have interesting threats. Atlanta, the top of the lineup, is doing most of the power. Jared Kelnick, Ozzie Albies, Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Marcell Ozuna has kind of been all of the offense that they've had. Arizona, it feels like you guys have some players who can run, Jake McCarthy, Corbin Carroll, but this isn't a team that steals as many bases as I think they did last year, and that's an area where Atlanta's been vulnerable. And so I kind of wonder if does Tony Lovello ask for more running from some of the corner infield types to try to take advantage of what feels like a weakness for Atlanta with allowing stolen bases. I'm kind of curious about that, how that's going to play out.
From the, I know Perdomo's a guy that can steal a bag because he had 16 last year at a pretty high efficiency rating. This year he's probably not as likely to steal because of the knee injury, but I know he had a big stolen base against the Padres over the weekend. Let's see. Perdomo has, okay, that was his only stolen base of the year. He's got one.
Yeah, he has one, but he's also only played, less than 30 games because of injury, right? Like that's part, like Alec Thomas, kind of, somewhat of a stolen base guy. He's got one stolen base. He's played less than 10 games. And so it's like we know Jock Peterson's not stealing that many. We know that Ketel Marte's not really a stolen base guy anymore. We know Christian Walker's not going to do it. But Carroll can do it. McCarthy can do it. I do think Perdomo can do it. I think Thomas could. And I think Randall Grichuk, who hasn't tried, I think he has enough foot speed where maybe not a straight stolen base, but pass balls, things like that, I definitely think he'll be able to advance. And so Atlanta's catching defense, especially against with these two lefties on the mound, has to be really good this series.
Yeah, I also think because you got lefties on the mound, you might see Kevin Newman in the series. Newman's 3-for-4. Mm-hmm. He has enough speed to do it. But like I said, Arizona doesn't really have as many running threats. It'll come down to, I think, the ability to keep Corbin Carroll and Jake McCarthy off the base if you want to shut down the Diamondbacks running game. Of course, McCarthy and Carroll have
Carroll's kind of been doing that with the bat, right? He's batting like 210 with it on base under 300. So like he's kind of done some of that himself. If you just keep that trend going, I think you're good.
Yeah, because just like last season, the two account for basically half their stolen base totals.
Yeah. See, a lot of Atlanta stolen base totals last year were Ronald Acuña Jr., right? He stole 73. And outside of that, your most prolific stolen base guy was Michael Harris, who's out with the hamstring injury. So Atlanta doesn't have a ton of stolen base threats. I want to say in the last 2 weeks, I want to say they've had three stolen bases. Kelnick took one and Albies took one. But outside of that, this team doesn't run a lot. Four of these nine position players have like bottom quartile sprint speeds. They're built to mash baseballs. And if they don't do that, it's going to be hard, as you can see by the no wins with five runs statistic. Like if they're not mashing baseballs, they're not scoring runs. And so that's going to be down to, can you miss off the plate versus on the plate? That's the big question here for this series against Atlanta.
Yeah, and also with the Braves running game, the Diamondbacks have an effective deterrent behind home plate.
Gabriel Moreno. Yep.
And the Braves are going to see him for three of the four games.
I was going to say he needs to start three of the four games. Obviously, nobody starts a catcher on a day game after a night game. But the finale on Thursday is a primetime is a nighttime game. So you'll see him for three of those games. He'll get one off. He'll probably come in and pinch hit and stick around for defense if it's a close game. So they've definitely. I don't expect to see a lot of action from Atlanta on the base pass outside of maybe a pass ball here and there. Moreno doesn't do that a lot either. He's a great catcher.
Yeah. So how do you feel about almost 10 o'clock start time? Wait, I think you're in the Central Time Zone, right?
I'm in Central Time, but Atlanta's in Eastern Time. I still don't love it. Mountain and Pacific Coast start times are rough, right? I'm 40 years old at this point. Like it's, I don't look forward to those, but at the very least I can put the kids to bed and everything first before the game comes on. I'm actually traveling on Thursday to Texas for All-Star Weekend for the Futures game and the draft and everything. So I'm actually going to miss the Thursday night game. I'll be on a flight at that time. But the rest of them, I'll be staying up late to watch them every night. That's what we do, but it's not ideal. For my biological clock now.
Yeah, I think Andrew Jones' son is going to be representing the Diamondbacks at the Futures game.
Drew, yeah.
Yep.
I'm glad he's finally healthy. It was such a weird streak to have three consecutive first-round picks have a shoulder injury suffered like the same season they got drafted. I'm glad he's finally healthy and finally starting to show why he was worthy of being a top pick in the entire draft. And I still think he's going to be a very good player. It's just a matter of now the development timeline's been pushed back a bit because of the injury and the struggles. And so let's get him moving to the system and let's get him on his path to Arizona. And I think the Futures game will be a big part of that.
Yeah. It'll be a chance. He actually did pretty well in the showcase, defensively at least, against the Rockies, if I remember correctly. He had that immaculate throw that almost threw out a fast runner on a clean base hit. But, that's pretty much all I have to offer for today. So, again, the Diamondbacks play Atlanta for all four games, 6:40 start time, Arizona time. For Atlanta Braves fans, that is almost 9:40 p.m. So
9:40 p.m. Eastern.
Yep. So, anyways, thanks everyone for watching. Again, check out the Snakes and Diamond podcast, which you can find on your favorite podcasting platform or here on YouTube. So, signing off, I'm Mike McDermott here with Lindsey Crosby. Yeah, wishing you a good last final week before the All-Star break.